Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into the weeds, looking at a couple of key documents.
That's right. We've got the bylaws and the Declaration of Restrictions for the Montecito Terrace Condominium Owners Association.
So basically, the rule book for this condo community, our mission today is, well, to figure out how this place actually works.
Exactly. We want to understand the structure, the rules, you know, the rights and duties of the owners living there.
It's about seeing how the community functions day to day.
And these documents are the blueprint. The bylaws are like the operational manual, how they run things.
The declaration.
That sets up the big picture.
Yeah.
The property rights, the restrictions.
Yeah.
The fundamental framework.
Okay, first things first. Where exactly is Montecito Terrace?
The documents pinpoint it clearly. City of Monterey Park, Los Angeles County, California.
Got it. LA County. Now, like any rule book, there's jargon. What are the key terms we need to grasp?
Definitely. You'll see association a lot. That's the owner's association itself. Properties means all the land involved. The declaration is this main document we're talking about. Common area, that's the shared stuff. Hallways, pools, maybe landscaping.
Right. Things everyone uses.
And a unit is just the individual condo someone owns. Getting these definitions down is pretty crucial for everything else.
Makes sense. Lays the groundwork. So who actually gets a say in this association? Who votes?
Well, there are two classes of membership. Class A is basically all the regular homeowners. Each unit gets one vote. Simple enough.
Okay, one unit, one vote. What's Class B?
Class B is the declarant that's usually the developer who built the place. Initially, they get three votes for each unit they still own.
Wow, three votes. It's a hefty advantage.
It is. It reflects their initial stake, you know, while the project is still getting established. But it doesn't last forever.
Okay. How does that change?
Class B membership converts to Class A under certain conditions.
Yeah.
Like when the total votes of Class A owners equal the total votes of Class B, or on the second anniversary of the first public report, that's a state disclosure document. And definitely no later than the fourth anniversary of that report.
So there's a built-in timeline for the homeowners to gain majority control.
Precisely. It's a transition mechanism.
Okay, so members have votes. How do they exercise them? Meetings, I assume.
Yes. There are organizational meetings to get things started, and then annual meetings, at least one per year.
When and where?
Usually held within a certain window, like maybe 6 months after a majority of units are sold, and typically in Los Angeles County.
What if something urgent comes up between annual meetings?
They can call special meetings. The president of the board or a majority of the directors can call one.
And members get notified.
Oh, yeah. There are rules for that. Written notice has to go out usually 10 to 30 days beforehand, explaining what the meeting's about.
Right. So no surprises. Now, you mentioned the board of directors. They're the ones running things day to day.
That's the idea. The association is managed by this board. Initially, the documents say three directors, but that number can grow.
And how long do they serve?
Terms are usually 1 year. And importantly, the members can remove a director with a majority vote if they're not happy.
Accountability. Do they get paid?
No compensation mentioned, but they can be reimbursed for, you know, actual expenses incurred doing board business.
Okay, so what kind of powers does this board actually have? What can they do?
Quite a bit, really. They can adopt and enforce rules for the community, manage and maintain the common areas, figure out the budget, and crucially, levy and collect assessments.
The fees owners pay.
Exactly. They can also hire managers or other employees, get insurance for the association, lots of operational stuff.
And duties, what must they do?
They have a duty to keep proper records, financial records, meeting minutes, supervise the officers like the president or treasurer, and enforce liens if people don't pay their assessments.
Let's talk about those assessments. How are they determined?
The declaration outlines how they're created. There are annual assessments based on the yearly budget, and sometimes special assessments for unexpected costs.
And the purpose?
It's all about funding the community's needs, promoting the health, safety, welfare of residents, maintaining the property value, keeping the common areas looking good.
And if someone doesn't pay?
Yeah.
You mentioned liens.
Yeah, it's serious. Non-payment can lead to late fees, interest, the association placing a lien on your property, which is a legal claim, and potentially even foreclosure in persistent cases. The basis for calculation can vary too. Sometimes it's equal, sometimes based on unit size or value.
Okay, so paying assessments is non-negotiable. What about rules for just living there? Use restrictions.
Oh, absolutely. There are usually limits on things like putting up signs without approval, rules about pets, maybe type or number,
Where else?
Owners are generally responsible for maintaining the inside of their own unit, and there are often strict rules about making alterations or modifications, especially anything affecting the building's exterior or structure.
So you can't just knock down a wall or paint your door purple without checking first?
Probably not. That usually requires approval, which often involves something called an architectural control committee.
Tell me about that committee.
The board can establish one, or it might be outlined in the declaration. Its job is basically to review any plans for construction or exterior changes to ensure they fit the community's aesthetic standards. Consistency is key.
Right, maintaining the overall look and feel. So, wrapping up, we've touched on the association structure, who's a member, how it's governed by the board, the financial side with assessments, and the rules for using the property.
Yeah, it gives you a pretty comprehensive overview of how Montecito Terrace is set up to function.
And understanding this stuff is, well, vital if you live there, or are thinking about buying into a place with similar rules.
Absolutely. It clarifies expectations, rights, responsibilities. It's the foundation for, ideally, a smoothly run community.
It really drives home how important these governing documents are for any kind of shared ownership or community living. It makes you wonder, you know, what's the perfect balance between individual freedom and community rules?
That's the perennial question, isn't it? How collective needs mesh with personal property rights. Always a balancing act.
A lot to think about.
Yeah.
Thanks for breaking down these Montecito Terrace documents with us.
My pleasure. It's always interesting to see how these communities are structured.